is my predecessor as the director of the Beis Din, and then I took over as the director for a 10-year period, 1998 to 2008, and then I came over here to become the dean of the yeshiva, to become the dean of yeshiva to Rabbeinu Yitzchak Elchanan, but I did not completely give up my Beis Din portfolio. So one of my conditions for coming over was that we build a Beis Din space in the building where I work, and that's what we did. And also, it was a wonderful opportunity to provide hands-on training for our rabbinical students who are training to become dayanim, who are training to become Jewish law judges. So this way, they could actually sit in on proceedings, they can observe proceedings, they could even participate in some measure. And this way, it becomes more like a teaching based in. The way that, say, Columbia Hospital is a teaching hospital, so we have a teaching based in. And it's really a wonderful way to prepare the students. And this is really, you know, one of the ways to segue into our small chat, but it's one of the ways in which we're helping to prepare the rabbis to better serve the communities, and to make sure that we have more qualified individuals who can be dayanim, who can actually sit and adjudicate cases and disputes within the community, and also where we can train them to become experts in halacha in different specialized fields, like, for example, the creation of Eruvin or the building of mikvos, or becoming specialists when it comes to infertility issues and reproductive technologies, where there are many, many shilas nowadays. And we're trying to develop more of a targeted training towards eligible and qualified students who can become experts in those fields. So that's all within the concentration of the same kollel that prepares students to become dayanim, to become Jewish law judges. That's the kollel ha'ola, which is named in tribute to Rabbi Lamb. It's the Rabbi Lamb kollel ha'ola. And we train the students to become experts in all kinds of different fields of halakha now. But what we're discovering is that the world of the rabbinate and the different functions that a rabbi is supposed to serve or can serve have expanded enormously over the last number of years. Now, there's an essay by the famous authority, the Sri Deish, Rabbi Yaakov Yechiel Weinberg, who was he was a rav in Switzerland, actually. And some people consider him to be the first modern Orthodox posek, but I think that in the yeshiva Haredi world, they take exception to that characterization. There's a book, a fascinating biography of Yaakov Yechiel Weinberg, written by Mark Shapiro, who's a professor of Jewish history and law in Scranton, I believe, at the University of Scranton. And he takes the position that if you look at the writings of the Sri Deish, they demonstrate that he was a very progressive thinking rabbi and authority. But the great thing about him is that he was accepted across the spectrum. By the Haredim, he was viewed as Haredi, and by the modern Orthodox, he was viewed as modern Orthodox. So that's, you know, the biggest challenge, that you should be shavu l'chol nefesh, that everybody should view you as really belonging to their camp. But he wrote concerning the function of the rabbi, that a rabbi basically has four functions. What are the four essential functions of a rabbi? He says a rabbi is supposed to be, first and foremost, a marbitz Torah, somebody who teaches Torah and disseminates Torah and is a person who is constantly steeped in the spreading of Torah wisdom. That is really the paramount role of the Rav. The second role that he describes is that a Rav is supposed to be a posek. A Rav is supposed to know the answer to all the questions. And in every single generation, there are different difficult questions that get posed. We live in a generation where there are many questions that get posed with respect to medical halakha, with respect to technology, questions that did not necessarily arise quite in the same manner in previous generations, and you have to constantly be up to date and current with respect to understanding how halakha addresses new technologies, new medical realities, and so forth. And a third function that he described is that our Rav has to be able to give a good drasha.
Right? You have to get up Shabbos morning. You have to be able to give a good drasha. Get up at a chasana, get up at a bar mitzvah, get up at a 50th anniversary party, whatever it is. A rav has to always have a good drasha. And it's not just for the sake of being a good performer to win an Academy Award, but a rav has to give a good drasha because he has to inspire his congregants, he has to inspire the community to be able to want to achieve greater spiritual heights in terms of their lives and to feel encouraged that living a Torah lifestyle is one that provides them with meaning and purpose in life. So this is extremely important that a rav has to constantly, through his words, inspire the population. And finally, he writes that a rav has to be a person who performs acts of chesed. It's very interesting when Rav Meir Berlin, who is a relative of the Soloveitchik family, which is perhaps the most famous rabbinical family associated with our yeshiva, based on Rav Moshe Soloveitchik, who was the Rosh Yeshiva here in the early 1930s and early 1940s, and then Rav Yosef Dov Soloveitchik, also known as the Rav, who was the major rabbinical presence here until his death in the early 1990s. So when Rav Meir Berlin asked the question of some of his closest relatives as to what is the major function of the Rav, he got two different answers. He went to the Aruch HaShulchan, whom I think was his uncle, or some other close relative, and the Aruch HaShulchan said to him, well, the major role of the Rav is to be a posek. The major role is that you have to know the answers to all the difficult halakha questions, and you have to know how to give the answer properly. We can understand that the Aruch HaShulchan would give that answer. The Aruch HaShulchan wrote the Aruch HaShulchan. In fact, he probably had some other name. Epstein was his name. But he wrote a treatise which went through basically every single area of Jewish law. He essentially wrote a restatement of the Shulchan Aruch and just switched around the words, not to get into copyright issues, and basically wrote how all the laws that comprise the entirety of the Jewish legal system have basically been updated for his current generation, and he went through the history of every single law and the updated analysis so people would know what to do. But then Rav Meir Berlin, he describes this in a book that he wrote. Rav Meir Berlin started out in Volozhin and he ended up in Yerushalayim. So Rav Meir Berlin wrote a book called From Volozhin to Yerushalayim, and he describes this incident in this book. So he says after he went to the Aruch HaShulchan, so then he went to his other close relative, he went to Rav Chaim Soloveitchik. Rav Chaim Soloveitchik, of course, was the father of Rav Moshe Soloveitchik and the grandfather of the Rav. So he went to Rav Chaim Soloveitchik and he said, in your opinion, what is the function of the Rav? And Rav Chaim Soloveitchik said very clearly and unambiguously, he said, the function of the Rav is to make sure that there is chesed performed for members of the community. It's to make sure that there's a gamach set up, so people who need staka will be able to get staka. He has to make sure that there are homes for the orphans, that there are provisions for the widows. He has to make sure that everybody is provided with all of their needs. This is the ultimate function of the Rav. And in fact, Rav Chaim Ozer Grodzinski, who was the foremost posek, the foremost Jewish law decisor in Europe in the early 20th century, Rav Chaim Ozer is quoted, and I know that this is an authentic quotation because it appears in his art school biography. So Rav Chaim Ozer is quoted as saying that in his youth he thought that the greatest accomplishment was if he would write a novel insight on some Talmudic sugya, some Talmudic notion. And when he became older, he realized that the greatest accomplishment was to help an elderly widow. That this is the ultimate accomplishment of a Rav. So the Sri Dayesh writes that a Rav essentially has to encompass all of these different areas. So first and foremost, when you build a successful smicha program, and you want to be able to continue serving the needs of the community, you have to make sure to prepare your graduates, to prepare your musmachim, to be able to discharge all of these essential functions. And this is something that yeshiva has really always been doing, but which we are trying to do now in an even more augmented fashion when we realize that the community needs have become even more multifarious and have become even more complex. You know, Yeshiva University was the first yeshiva that was set up in America. It was founded back in 1886. And I was describing this before to one of you. That Yeshiva University, I always compare to when I'm asked by our PR department for kind of some type of catchy hook in which to present what Yeshiva is all about. So I say, think Coca-Cola. You know, Yeshiva University is the original Yeshiva here on American shores, and we're still it. We're still the most relevant Yeshiva, and we still are responsive to the needs of the community. We still have the most authentic tradition. There's a Chagas Micha picture from last year where they show all of us dancing down the street. I think it's perhaps exactly 1 year ago today that we celebrated our quadrennial Chagas Micha celebration, which celebrates all of the musmachim who received smicha over the course of the previous 4 years. And last year was our biggest gala celebratory event. I don't know how many of you were there. It was a wonderful, wonderful event. And if you missed it, you could watch the whole thing on YouTube or on our REITS website where we have it all broadcast. But we had our largest group of graduating musmachim ever. We had 200 graduating musmachim. I only said at the time that I worry that we have to be able to continue to produce enough balabatim to sustain our musmachim. But we have 200 musmachim at our Chag HaSmicha, and afterwards we were dancing in the street. And there's this picture of myself dancing, holding the hands of Rav Shechter, and Rav Shechter is dancing, holding the hands of Rav Yankelovitz. And this picture epitomized for me just the tradition and the continuity that is represented by yeshiva. Because you have myself as the new dean and I'm a Talmud of Rav Shechter. You have Rav Shechter who's a Talmud of Rav Yankelovitz. And you have Rav Yankelovitz who's a Talmud of the Chofetz Chaim. And what other yeshiva boasts that type of continuity in terms of the tradition of the classical yeshiva learning, going all the way back to Europe and then continuing here in America and remaining relevant up until this very day. So in terms of teaching our Rebbeim to be Mabitz Torah, to be able to disseminate Torah, we have, Baruch Hashem, the most outstanding faculty of a Rosh Yeshiva that any yeshiva can boast. At least three generations of Talmidei Chachamim, including Rebbeim, most of them who received their smicha right here in YU, but including Rebbeim who came over from Eretz Yisrael to bring some of the Torah Eretz Yisrael to our yeshiva, and including Rebbeim who learned in Lakewood and what might be classified as more right-wing yeshivas, but just to make sure that we have a very full-bodied flavor of a Torah that is taught to all of our students, and where we have a rigorous curriculum in which they are learning in the classical tradition all of the Masechtos or the Gemaras for 6-7 years in the yeshiva before they receive smicha, in which they're learning Yoredeya, and they're learning Hilchos Nida, and they're learning Hilchos Avelis, and they're learning Hilchos Shabbos, and they're learning very rigorously and vigorously many, many different areas of halacha so that they can be trained to be Mabitzei Torah, and where every single Rav who has an interest in going into chinuch, in being a Rebbe, so that he'll be able to transmit the Torah tradition to a new generation of students, we also require that they receive a master's degree in Jewish education so they'll have the necessary pedagogical skills to be able to transmit Torah properly in the lingo, in the language, in the style that resonates with the next generation, if it means having to know how to use smart board and other recent technologies in terms of how to be able to teach. So that's part of what it means in the 21st century when you're preparing a student to be a rabbi and to be a Mabitz Torah. So this is, if we speak about the future of the YU Rabbinate, it is continuing to teach the students to be a Mabitzei Torah, but to teach them to be disseminators of Torah in a fashion that will actually connect with the youth of today and with the educational needs of today, and that's what we do in coordination with our graduate school programming as well, which is a very unique model within Yeshiva University, where it's not only a yeshiva, but it's also a place where students in their college years pick up worldly wisdom, and even in their smicha years have the benefit of other graduate school programs in order to be able to enhance their skill sets and to ensure their future productivity. And in terms of being a posek, in terms of teaching them to decide areas of Jewish law, we have first of all built up, as I mentioned at the beginning of my remarks, our Kolel Ha'ra'ah, the Kolel which trains students to become Dayanim, to become Poskim, but even for every single Musmach, they have to become expert in many, many different areas of Halacha. We recently added a new component of Hilchos Shabbos to our curriculum, where every student has to be tested on their ability to understand the complex laws relating to what life-saving measures can be taken on Shabbos with respect to people who are ill. People are either deathly ill or otherwise terminally ill, where rabbis have a very pronounced responsibility to be expert in these areas. The Talmud Yerushalmi says that if a person is in a dangerous medical situation on Shabbos and they're not sure whether they're allowed to violate Shabbos in order to save somebody's life, so the Gemara says that there is a mitzvah, pikuach nefesh, that overrides Shabbos, that you have to violate the Shabbos to save somebody's life, and the person who acts with the most alacrity is considered to be the most praiseworthy. A person who has to take the time to ask the question is considered to be a shofech damim, is considered to be a spiller of blood, and the rabbi who has a congregant ask him the question, who doesn't know on his own what to do, because the rabbi hasn't made sufficiently clear what you're allowed to do and supposed to do to save a life on Shabbos, harezem miguna, that is considered to be a tremendous embarrassment, is considered to be a tremendous disgrace to the rabbi who has not properly educated his congregants in that area. So therefore, it is our responsibility to train our rabbis adequately to make sure that they will be in the category of zaris, of praiseworthy, and not in the category of miguna. So that is another important area that we've added, in addition to making sure that our rabbis are erudite in the applications of Hilchos Nida nowadays. Hilchos Nida have become more complicated because of all kinds of medical procedures, of medical technologies. The rabbi has to be well-versed in all of these things. And even in Hilchos Avelos, the laws of mourning, what most rabbis have discovered is that the laws of mourning don't begin upon the moment of death. The laws of mourning begin in the months and weeks that precede a person's death, when there were all kinds of questions about appropriate medical care, where rabbis are often consulted about end-of-life issues, how long does one prolong life-saving measures, even when it causes tremendous pain and discomfort. These types of questions as well have become an essential part of our smicha curriculum, so rabbis can learn about what their role needs to be when it comes to end-of-life issues. When it comes to giving drashos, which really, more broadly speaking, has to do with how to properly inspire one's congregation, we have hired the most expert professionals in the public speaking arena to be able to teach our students not only the classic skills of homiletics, but also about public speaking skills in general, so that our students, particularly those who are going to become shul rabbis, take a very robust regiment of classes having to do with public speaking, and also with respect to pastoral counseling, also with respect to being able to lift up people's spirits in times of stress, to teach them the skills of how to be an adequate counselor, how to be an adequate mediator, how to be an appropriate therapist, and also just as importantly, how to know their boundaries and their limitations, and at what point in time a Rav has to say, whoa, this is beyond my territory, I can't really handle this situation anymore, and I have to refer you to a professional therapist of another sort. So we teach boundaries and we teach skills, and we were actually written up in the New York Times last year about the cutting-edge nature of our rabbinic training program, because we actually hire professional actors to come in and simulate situations so that, for example, a sad situation like breaking the news of the death of a close family member is one that a rab doesn't have to deal with for the first time, and he's actually out there in the field, but can deal with in a simulated situation with actors in the classroom. And this way, if he makes certain mistakes, the mistakes can be corrected before he has to begin dealing with these real life situations rather than on the job, although of course there's always a certain amount of on the job training as well. And another very important component of the program that we have built up and that we will continue to build up with God willing is our internship program. The Smicha program at YU, if you go back to the 1950s, used to be a 2-year program, and then it became more intensive and they made it into a 3-year program, and then finally in the 1980s or so, it became a 4-year program. There was even some talk now of making it a 5-year program, which it is for a lot of fellows because many just never want to leave. But but it's still officially a 4-year program. But with that being said, during the 4th year, we've introduced a very intensive internship element where the students really spend the bulk of their time, if they're going into the pulpit, working as interns in shuls where they can get the hands-on experience. If they're going into chinuch, working as interns in the schools where they can get the hands-on experience. If they're going into chaplaincy, working in the hospitals. If they're going into outreach, working for the kibbutz organizations, so that we give them the experience even while they are still learning as students in the program. And finally, as chesed, this is, I would say, also perhaps the greatest area of a potential development in the future. When we speak about chesed, we think about how we can serve the broader community. And one of the particular goals and objectives that we have right now is to make sure that we don't lose sight of those whom I describe as behind the curtain. In this past week's parsha says that Moshe Rabbeinu gave a full accounting of the Mishkan, right? It says, Eilef Ekudei HaMishkan, Mishkan HaEidus. There's one opinion in the Medrash, by the way, Rabbi Chanina, who holds that the day that the Mishkan was completed was Rosh Chodesh Adar. So according to one opinion, this is actually the anniversary of the date of the completion of the Mishkan. So the more well-known opinion is that it was the 25th day of Kislev that corresponded to Hanukkah, but there is an opinion that held that it was Rosh Chodesh Adar. So Moshe, it says, gave a full accounting, but then he could not account for 1,775 shkolim of kesef. He couldn't remember what happened to those shkolim. And then he remembered, oh, these were the hooks that hold the pillars in the courtyard that connect them to the curtains. So Shimon Schwab asked, why did he forget about the hooks? He says he forgot about the hooks because the hooks were behind the curtains and nobody could see them. And he says this shows the importance of a leader to remember those people whom he doesn't necessarily see in the shul, he doesn't necessarily see in the community, those people who are behind the curtains. It's kind of the opposite of the statement in the Wizard of Oz, don't pay attention to the man behind the curtain. So the message here was pay attention to the people behind the curtain. So we train the rabbis today to pay attention to the people behind the curtain, the people who aren't necessarily in the community yet. There are all kinds of outreach opportunities, and also it's necessary to pay attention to the people who might be, for whatever reason, disillusioned, or the people who might be struggling to maintain their faith, the people who might be looking for other avenues to explore their religiosity, to be able to make sure to keep those people welcome, to keep those people within the community, to find opportunities for those people to feel like they have a place within the mainstream Orthodox community. This is a very important piece of potential in terms of what the rabbinate today can accomplish. I think that if you look at the broader Jewish community today, you find more opportunity than ever before for a real unification of the people. I don't think that there's as much ideological divide as there used to be. You know, the Jews who formed the Reform and Conservative movements, if they were ideologically driven 200 years ago or 100 years ago, but today, basically, those Jews who are not within mainstream orthodoxy are Jews, for the most part, who simply don't have a sufficient Jewish education. It's not that there's any shita, that there's any ideological resistance, and therefore there are great opportunities to reach out to entire areas, entire communities, entire regions where we have not yet been able to bring the beauty of Torah and to instill the beauty of Torah into those communities, into those regions, in order to really make our entire Jewish community here in America a greater sanctification of God's name, a Kiddush Hashem, for the entire world. And these are the areas where we are building, where we are developing, where we are including other elements of the community in our programming. Last year we had a Chinuch program in which we included even members of non-Orthodox day schools to be able to learn from our methodologies and from our teachings, because ultimately these were people who are interested in just imparting Torah to young children, and ultimately we hope that we'll be able to continue, even within our own walls here at Yeshiva University, to continue that education of young children together with our rabbinical training program. So it's been a pleasure to be able to introduce the program today at Yeshiva to you, and to tell you a little bit about the future of the YU Rabbinate. And of course, to the extent that any of you want to visit YU in the future and have me take you around and show you the Beis Medrash and so show you more about our program here, I would love to do so, and it's really a special privilege and pleasure for me to have been able to address you this morning.